Julie Burstein. I'm in for Leonard Lopate today. And in the 1940s, when the novelist Susan Richard Shreve contracted polio as a tiny child, the disease was something that was feared and also carried with it an undercurrent of stigma, as well as the possibility of death or permanent physical paralysis. In her new memoir, Ms. Shreve writes about her childhood wrestle with the effects of the disease and the almost 2 years she spent at Warm Springs, where she had a series of operations that enabled her to walk better and also began to figure out who she was in the world. The book is just out from Houghton Mifflin, and I'm pleased that it brings Susan Richard Shreve to the Leonard Lopate Show today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks,
Thank you.
Julie.
Susan, you were very, very young when you contracted polio. You probably don't remember it. Did your parents tell you stories about what it was like when you became ill?
I was a baby, and I don't remember it. And actually, given the choice, it's probably better not to have known any kind of walking life before. All they told me actually very little. They only told me that I was paralyzed below the neck and that I was diagnosed as having a particular kind of strep throat, which was very frequent. They didn't know how to diagnose polio. Even Roosevelt's polio wasn't diagnosed correctly at first. And so that's what they thought I had.
And so when the paralysis lingered, did they think that it was something else, or did your parents just say, all right, this is our baby, let's see what we can do for her?
Gradually you get better, and what is left is really the result of the disease, and in my case it was the right side that was left impaired. And then afterwards, after the virus was gone, my parents took me to a doctor because it didn't seem like strep throat then.
When you were growing up, do you remember becoming aware that you were different, or were you just growing up in your family with your parents?
I certainly was different. I was not different at home, but a couple of things that struck me. One was that my mother, my parents were in their own particular way shy, but especially my mother. And she, at a very early age, taught me to, recognizing that people were looking at me, taught me to take the aggressive step and say, my name is Susie Richards, and introduce myself rather than holding back. It was a very good thing for me to have learned, because it's sort of the best defense is a good offense.
And very interesting from a very shy mother to have her give you that very... She did seem in the book to really want you to feel like you could do anything.
She did, and she was tough, and she really wanted me to have an absolutely normal life and did everything possible. This book is, in a sense, I didn't expect it was going to be, but in rereading it after it was edited and so forth, I saw it was really a tribute to my mother.
There's a moment where you talk about how she used to tell you to stand up like a dancer and really believe you were a dancer. And I got the sense that you did.
I did. And she was a very imaginative woman, which was lucky because she spent hours having me exercise, which couldn't have been duller for a child, but it was always a game. It was always full of imagination. I was always playing a role. So I believed I was many people.
And that was good training for a writer and a novelist, too.
It was. It was a great thing for a writer and a novelist.
How old were you when you knew that you could go to Warm Springs? How did that come about?
I think my mother knew about Warm Springs for quite a while, but she had the sense that if I went there for surgery, which I was going to need if I was going to get any better or not continually get worse, that I should wait until I was older, until my bones had stopped growing. And so I'd heard about it for a long time, and it never struck me as anything but terrifically exciting to go to this place where there were a lot of other people just like me. And she was right, as it turned out. When I did have surgery, the bones of my right leg stopped growing. So it was lucky that the surgery wasn't performed when I was 5.
And you were 11 when you went?
I was 11.
You said that you found people just like you, but one of the most poignant scenes is when you arrive at Warm Springs and you, having learned to walk because of all the work you'd done with your mother, ask for a wheelchair.
That's right. I expected to find people just like me because I'd been different in school And so I expected when I went to Warm Springs, it would be kind of a summer camp of like people. And in fact, people were in very bad shape. They were almost all of them in wheelchairs or on stretchers. And so I immediately wanted to have my own wheelchair and to at least appear to be as crippled as they were. It was a funny switch I had to make.
And your mom backed you up.
She said
she needs one, even though you didn't really need one. She sounds like she was a fierce advocate.
She was a fierce advocate.
One of the next poignant moment, though, is when she has to leave and you're left by yourself in this strange place where they're trying to help you. But here you are, 11 years old, and you're going to be there by yourself for quite a while.
I think in retrospect, it was a great deal harder than I allowed myself. Children are amazing in their capacity to adjust to whatever the moment brings, that I allowed myself to realize. And so I simply had to make a life for myself there. It had its problems, but it really, and I certainly have been left with a kind of homesickness that continues. But it was in many ways quite an astonishing thing to have those pre-adolescent years without anybody telling you what to do or anyone to talk to for reference. I learned a lot.
One thing that I was struck by was exactly that this is a memoir both of what you went through as someone with polio and what Warm Springs was like, but it also is like a window into an 11 and 12-year-old girl's mind of that incredible tension between wanting to be your own person and do whatever you want and wanting to be the good girl that everybody expects you to
exactly.
be.
Exactly. And I saw myself as a bad girl, as someone always getting into trouble. And I was adventurous. And I think also a lot of patients with polio whose bodies don't work very well are adventurous. They have to go somewhere where their minds go flying around.
Yeah.
And I acted out. That's what I tended to do, was act out what was in my mind. Not always the best idea, but I learned the hard way.
I'm Julie Burstein. I'm here for Leonard Lopate, and I'm here with the writer Susan Richards-Shreve, who is a novelist who has just published a memoir of her own life as a young girl in Warm Springs. You know, the subtitle is called Traces of a Childhood at FDR's Polio Haven. Traces has another meaning for people with polio.
Traces are what remains after the polio virus. There are little whispers of muscles. And if they do remain, the sense is that they can be encouraged to develop again. And so all of us at Warm Springs, it was a word constantly in use, all of us at Warm Springs were trying to make these muscles behave themselves and get active again.
Did you find that you're a person with a lot of optimism and a lot of drive, from what I can sense from the book? Did you find that that was true of the other kids that you met?
Absolutely.
There.
And David Oshinsky's Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The History of Polio, he remarks, and I saw in a lot of the reading I did, because I did do a lot of reading about polio and about the history of the public health epidemic, he really emphasizes the fact that there's some quality of optimism and not looking back and no self-pity among polio patients in general. I'm not sure why.
There did seem, and I've seen it with children who are ill, that there is this incredible drive to be well, whatever well means, to really move yourself to another point so that you're okay.
Exactly. And I think you're right. I think it is very true of children in general. Children who I've known with cancer have that same sense. They don't seem defeated in ways that we feel defeated about them.
Did you find in revisiting this time in your life there were surprises for you from what, you know, this is a time that you lived through and you probably told your children about, but when you started to dive into it to think, I'm going to write a memoir, were there things that struck you as, oh, I didn't remember it exactly that way?
What I really found in looking back, because as a memoir, it's really about memory, that memory is also discovery. And what I discovered about myself was really how I became the person that I am, I suppose. And what contributed to it, as certainly Warm Springs did. I walked away. I didn't look back for a very long time.
You open the book with an experience that you then close the book with, which is your first imagining what it would be like to go careening down a hill in your wheelchair, and then you're talking a good friend into doing this with you. And it doesn't end well at the end of the book. And you write that you don't know what happened to this young boy. Have you found anything out since you've published the book?
I have.
You have.
And I never expected that I would find it out, but I did.
Can you tell us a little bit about that story, a little more than what I just said?
The story is, I had a crush. I had constant crushes. And I had a crush on this young boy. And to me, the most exciting thing to do with him would be to race down this steep hill, which the boys did, the girls did not.
So this was not just an idea you came up with.
No, it's not mine alone. Mm-hmm. And to race down the hill with this boy in this great race toward freedom is how it felt to me. And we did. And the wheelchairs flipped. And that is really the last I knew about this boy who's called Joey Buckley. And my publisher said, you know, do you think he's going to appear? I said, not a chance. I mean, this was 55 years ago. He is not going to be reading this book. And he didn't. But I went to Warm Springs a year ago. And when I went there, I asked to see a hill. And about a month ago, I got a telephone call from a man in Tennessee who asked me if I had been at Warm Springs in 1952, had I raced down a hill with a boy, and said, that boy is me. And what he had just done was to go back to Warm Springs, perhaps because you reach a certain age that you want to look at it again, and said, I want to see a hill. So he has come back into my life sort of full force. I got on an airplane and went to Nashville.
My goodness.
So it's been one of those, because that was a lingering sense of guilt that I had perpetrated this accident
because he broke his leg that had just been operated on.
That's right.
When the wheelchair mm-hmm. flipped.
That's right. And so to find out that in fact he was alive and well and had a life and a good life was sort of a whole new life of the mind for me.
You know, you published this book with the last line saying, I don't know what happened to him. And here, a few months later, you have this whole other story.
I know. It's been very surprising. And I kind of don't, here I am talking about it on the air, but I kind of don't know yet what to do with it.
Did you find that in meeting him again after all these years, was there that young boy that you remembered in this man who had had this long life?
There was what really I felt was, this is the kind of kid I would have loved when I was a young girl. He's got a lot of energy, is sort of a little bit of naughtiness. He's a real talker. And
he was sure he was going to play football. He had the most amazing will in the way you remember him.
He had a terrific will and a lot of energy. He did not, as I said, have a crush on me, however.
In the book, you also talk about the kind of flirting with religion that you did at this point, which I can imagine. You're there all by yourself, and you find this priest who is also very charismatic. Where did that take you when you were 11 and 12?
I think it Catholicism. I had grown up in a Quaker school with Quaker background. And Catholicism is almost the opposite. It was full of mystery and incense and metaphor, and I found it very sexy. I'm ashamed to say it was. I found him charismatic, and I found the idea that we sat together while we sort of talked about Catholicism, and I went through the process of conversion, which I dropped as soon as I went back to Washington, D.C., because it was nothing without that priest for me.
Well, I'm sorry to say that we're out of time. I got so wrapped up in your story, but thank you so much for coming in and talking with us today.
Thank you, Julie.
Susan Richards Shreve is the author of Warm Springs, Traces of a Childhood at FDR's Polio Haven, that has just come out from Houghton Mifflin.